Hey everybody, welcome to Priorcaster. This is Bob, and today I have Dan with me. No, Dan, why would I call you Dan? Your name's
three
Dan.
Letters. Sorry.
I think I called you Dan originally whenever I talked to you. That's why I've got it stuck in my head.
No sweat.
Ted is with me. You know why I don't want to call you Ted?
Why?
Because of TED Talk.
Yeah, I get a lot of that. Yep.
Yeah. And Ted has got, he was with a company. You invented a company, I guess we should say. You founded a company.
I did.
That was called Give Me Talk back in the day. And so we're going to talk about that with Ted. Thank you. And I apologize profusely for that. But I always think it's wrong because I think a TED Talk and Give Me Talk. And so in my head, I'm like, this isn't right.
It's very confusing.
But welcome, Ted, to the show. And thanks for putting up with me so far. I appreciate it. So Give Me Talk. Now, can you give me a little bit of a brief history on what that was?
Sure.
So, or what it is it still in existence, maybe? I don't know.
No, that's been a long time. So this is going back to the first internet boom. I'm a Chicagoan. I was doing websites for financial institutions back in like 95-ish.
Oh, wow.
And wound up going to Silicon Valley to start the digital side of an agency before agencies really were digital. Mm-hmm. And after about a year of being in Silicon Valley, you know, a good Midwesterner, my dad worked at the same bank for like 30 years. Startups weren't really a thing for us. We had so many people coming through the agency who were just spinning up companies and, you know, taking them out into the world at breakneck pace. And I was fascinated by it. And along the way, during my time at the agency, I had an idea that it'd be interesting to be able to do your own talk shows on the internet and not have any gatekeepers, not have to appeal mm-hmm. to the network or get anybody's approval to make your voice heard. And so I thought that was pretty interesting. And I was on a trip in Hong Kong, and I had a friend set up a landing page, which said, give me talk. We are going to cut the legs out of terrestrial radio. Sign up to be notified when we launch. And it had a little blurb on, you know, you'd make your own radio show. And I figured I'm going to spam mail, back when that was legal, about 2,500 journalists.
Yeah.
If anyone finds this interesting, then I'll take it on. If they don't, I won't. And so I went to some internet cafe. I sent the release out. It was formatted like a press release too, so it had kind of a pro look. And when I got home, I had a phone by my bed that I put a work number on, and that was the number in the press release. And it was like the New York Times was on there, NPR, BBC. And so it's like a week and a half after I sent that release, I had like 500 words in the New York Times about how this thing I had not yet in any way structured was going to kill terrestrial radio. And that meant I just had to get into action pretty quick. And so I went and learned, you know, fundraising and staffing and streaming, and got some really smart people, and moved on from my position at the agency and went out and raised money. And that was the era of Get Big Fast. I hooked up with an organization called Garage.com. A fellow named Guy Kawasaki ran that.
he's not really known, I don't think.
Yeah, right. He's kind of a he keeps pretty quiet. But his organization was really helpful. They put some money in. They were really, really helpful to me in accelerating. And we got that thing up and running and had about 10,000 broadcasters on it. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't called podcasting because there were no pods.
Right.
It was called do-it-yourself internet radio. And it was interesting. I think one of the things you'll find interesting about it is it took a very long time for podcasting to find out what it was. And so mm-hmm. when we were out pitching it, we did like 110 investment meetings. I mean, a lot. And the reactions we got from folks is really interesting. When you call it do-it-yourself internet radio, people could not get themselves wrestled out of AM talk radio of the 90s and the dial-in format, right?
Mm-hmm. So
in the 90s, radio talk shows were call-ins largely. They were live, and people would call in, and it's like sports radio now. And so people were like, well, how are you going to do this form of broadcasting if you can't have live call-ins? Because at that time, we couldn't do live streaming. And we were trying to tell them it's asynchronous. You listen to it in your phone time, it's a whole different model, right? It's right. Not, it's not radio, but we have to use that word. So you have a hook to hang the concept on. And it was just a really funny, it was trying to get people off the starter blocks just around this, the fact that you could make these shows, just put them out in the world and people would listen when they want to. And their interaction, it was purely a one-way thing. And so anyway, we got the show, we got the site up and running, hired way too many people. It was the era of get big fast. And we had like, at our tops, we had like 35 people when truly we needed about four. You know, I was young. I was following the same advice a lot of people were following. I'm not making excuses for myself, but that was kind of the zeitgeist then. Got a CEO who ran one of Disney's studios to come in. Great guy. Nobody knew the space, so there wasn't a whole lot of knowledge to bring or experience to bring because it was all brand new. But ran it up. Like I say, got about 10,000 shows. It looks exactly, you know, I've gone back occasionally just to refresh myself on it, but it looks exactly like podcasting sites now. It's got reviews and everything's organized by topic and series. And we had our own broadcasting tool, our own editing and recording tool that you would download and you could put your show together in it. And then boom, we were out in New York trying to raise some money and the market tanked. And like that afternoon, meetings started canceling because everybody saw it coming. And without any capital, it really wasn't going to be able to go on as it was. Now, my last sentence of this story, speaking of not making excuses, we had a really brilliant engineering team here in Chicago. I made a point of hiring them here in Chicago. And one of the engineers said to me, you know, you still have some money in the bank. And we did. We had actually a fair amount of money in the bank. He said, why don't you just let this thing run, turn off support, just let it accumulate shows. And on the back end of this downturn, you're going to have this massive inventory of originally produced audio. You'll know who's popular and all that. And I said, no, I don't know. I mean, I've revisited that. I don't even recall that fellow's name anymore, but I'd like to go back to him and just say, can you say that to me again in that time and have me agree with you? It's a very brilliant, it was a very simple and brilliant suggestion. He's the only one who made it. So that's kind of the story. Give me talk. I mean, there's a lot of details in there, but that's kind of the broad stroke.
So were you, as far as like, playing the audio, right? What were you using as far as that goes? Was it proprietary? Yeah.
So for your older listeners, you'll remember the Real Audio.
We started in Real Audio. We started our show in Real Audio. Yeah,
exactly. So that's what, so it was a big deal when we were talking to Real Audio. We would tell investors we were talking to Real Audio and using Real Player. And they were only, you know, some of the formats escape me now, but they were one of the biggest players in it. And we were putting them together in a Smile format, which would like stitch things together so you could do interstitial ads, I think at the time were called interstitials. And it was a very, you know, it was the earliest days of that technology. And it was hard. Everybody had to pick a player and we were still dealing with dial up, you know, so people were using modems, you know, in some cases. And it was just a very different, it was a very different environment to come out into. And so I think it's nice. Everything is caught up now and it's very interesting to watch technologies launch into circumstances that are ready for them. Sort of like ChatGPT has come into a circumstance where everybody's kind of ready for it. Everyone's got, you know, a mobile phone that'll do that thing. Everybody's got tons of like network capacity. But back in the day, we were wrestling with all kinds of stuff. And, you know, our growth was slow and steady. And I don't think it probably would have, until we got to some way of playing those shows that wasn't a laptop, which wound up being pods, I'm not sure we've seen the kind of growth that that we wanted. But, yeah.
So, I started recording stuff in 1999 with Real Audio and so forth. And so this is just ahead of that. Sounds like you said 95, 96, 97.
Well, no, actually when we started, it was 99. So you and I did it at the same time. I went out to the Valley in 96. Okay. So you and I started the same year.
That's interesting because I especially from Chicago. So I'm in St. Louis, Missouri. Okay. And not that the geography matters on the internet so much, but I'm surprised that I didn't happen across this at the time. Now there was another service probably not that early, but maybe a little bit later, called Iyada. I don't know if you remember this one.
I do remember that. Yeah. Now I haven't thought of it in decades, but I remember.
So it probably was early 2000s from my recollection. Mm-hmm. And it kind of had it was different, but similar, I guess. But there wasn't a lot of these things. And so that's why another one was called Talk Shoe.
Don't remember Talk Shoe.
Yeah, Talk Shoe was out of New York. And I remember playing with that. And then Live 365 was another space.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that.
And I had the pleasure of being berated by the CEO of Live 365 on another talk show back in the early 2000s, which was fun.
What were you berated for?
Probably because I was a flippant jerk during an interview, and he didn't appreciate my humor. Hmm. So whenever you were thinking about this, if you can kind of go back a little bit, and by the way, you look very young. I want to tell you that right now.
Wow.
For being this idea back then, I'm like, this guy is really young looking. Whoa. The
that makes the whole podcast worth doing right there.
There you go. So you wanted to kind of disrupt radio in a way, but I mean, was that the only goal? I mean, what other kind of things were you thinking about at that time period?
It was really interesting. I'll tell you, when the idea came up, the sheer novelty of the idea appealed to me. I thought it was just so different than the current way of doing that business that just that change in the model was really appealing to me. It was so clearly better. Mm-hmm. And I'm not really that anti-establishment a guy, but the more I sat with the idea, the more it did become clear to me that you had to throw a lot of levers to get your voice out into the world. And was that necessarily a good thing? I think that, you know, the jury's still out on that question. You really had to go through a lot of approvals by people who may or may not be the kinds of people who should approve it. And so when the fellow came in from Disney, his name was Bill Gross. He ran something called Jumbo Pictures there. It's just a great, great guy and a really fun guy to work with. But he came up with the tagline where free speech is really free, which has, of course, two sides to it. One is that we didn't charge anybody to make a show and we didn't charge anybody to listen to a show and we didn't gatekeep at all. Now, we, of course, had your typical, you know, terms of use and, you know, certain things were off limits, but by and large, it was just do whatever you want, listen to whatever you want, make whatever shows you want. And I thought that idea was just very appealing. And it's hard to even imagine, I think, for people who are younger today, like that didn't exist back when, you know, you and I remember the days of like how many channels we had in Chicago, maybe six.
Right.
Maybe. Yeah. You had a few different talk radio stations, but you were receiving what was selected for you to receive in a big way. And it's interesting now, just as we're talking about it, the environment people grow up in now, where you can go up on a podcasting site and have tens of thousands of shows done by people who are not professionally groomed to do these things and are niche to the extreme, which I think is one of the fascinating. Right. That I loved that about it. And what you're doing right now, of course, like this, talking about the old days and
yeah, who would have thought this was the old days, right? We're talking about technology that is leaps and bounds beyond anything prior, and yet it's the old days right now. We're on the old days.
It is. It's interesting. And now I'm working in. So I've moved into doing. I went and did consulting work for a long time, and stayed in technology. But we've come up with an idea around voice tech again, using AI. Like before, we came up with this before ChatGPT made AI cool. It was like doing basically on location voice in sales settings and doing what this call may be recorded for quality assurance, doing that same model in on location environments like car dealerships and mattress stores, places where it's a complicated sales situation. It's hard to take notes. It's hard to remember. You don't know what sales approaches work. Exactly what companies have been doing in that phone sales space for, you know, about a decade, honestly.
So it's hard kind of in environment, as it were, like you're just out on the lot or you're in, you know, an office somewhere, anywhere.
Yeah, typically what we're working on is commission salespeople who want to get better at their trade. Mm-hmm. People walking into a sales situation where they don't know much about the product and it's complicated and it's a long conversation. So we're doing like a pilot with Lincoln, the automotive company. Mm-hmm. And car sales is very much like that. Like I bought a car in April and I actually took our product out on all my test drives and recorded it. And then I can just ask it questions like, you know, which one had the best lease package? What was the one with the 4-liter engine? And then they can ask questions on their end, like, you know, what objections did the customer have? Did they want to finance? Did they want to pay cash? You know, and if you have 1,000 of those conversations, you can ask questions across like what sales appeals work best, like the Lincoln Corsair, or what are the competitive models people are considering when they think about a Lincoln Navigator? So mm-hmm. It's an interesting corollary to the, this call may be recorded because the same data is just floating into the atmosphere in all of these sales situations.
So this is a thing that compiles the data for you. So it's essentially like a searchable PDF, you know, but better than that.
Better than that. So what it does is it grabs the audio files. It does what's called diarization. So it figures out who said what. Mm-hmm. And those tools are really good. And that's, again, coming into a place where like tools are good enough to support as opposed to the prior streaming with real audio and all that. But mm-hmm. it'll do diarization. So you'll have basically a movie script transcript of the conversation, and then AI can look at that transcript and do anything you want. It can find out, it can do what is the sentiment, how many speakers were involved, talk time for everybody, again, competitive mentions, objections. Mm-hmm. And if you have enough of that data, you can start looking at whole markets. You can say, you know, what's the best approach to selling Lincolns in the Midwest versus the Southwest, you mm-hmm. know, or anything, or, you know, mattresses are a great one because they're complicated. It's a long process. It all happens in person. All of those are in person and they'll never not be in person. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. The audio capture is a fascinating, challenging sort of opportunity for us. We have really smart people in that. But it's interesting back in the voice game. I don't know why I'm in the voice tech game
again. So how do you capture then? What do you use to do your capture? Just on the phone or?
Well, we have an app for the phone, and we've gone through pretty much every wired and wireless microphone that's been manufactured. We also have created our own microphone array wearable device, and mm-hmm. actually it's patent pending now, which is kind of cool. Mm-hmm. But it beams out and it looks at the sound that's coming in towards it versus the sound that's coming in from above it. Mm-hmm. And it uses a bunch of complicated math to figure out who said what in a really, really accurate way. And so it'll know if you're the person in front or if you're the person up top, and it'll cut out everybody around. It is interesting the number of challenges in capturing audio in something like, you know, a crowded store. We've done this in retail. We've done it in a lot of really noisy environments. And it's a really interesting challenge. And so we may have some hardware someday. We do have that design already ready to go. But right now we're doing it in a phone app, which is yielding sufficient results for what our kind of V1 is.
So it seems like it's kind of spatially aware, but only through the audio, not through, mm-hmm. You don't have to have the camera on or anything like that for the
zero camera.
Yeah.
Zero cameras, no video. It's amazing the amount, you know, there's a company called Gong that's done a brilliant job in just generally capturing audio through sales calls. When you get one of those calls and it says this call may be recorded or monitored for quality assurance, mm-hmm. fairly good chance that file is going off to Gong's AI and is being kind of sliced and diced and mined in every way you can think of. And people are rabid. I mean, in the way that like consumers are rabid about Apple, mm-hmm. like sales managers are rabid about Gong because there's so much data locked in a conversation, and they just figured out, you know, it's only two wires. It's you and me on a phone call or on this particular call that we're doing right now. It's very easy to get the audio.
Right.
And
well, yeah.
And you can tell who's who. They know exactly who's who. They don't have to do diarization. and figure out, you know, which speaker is which. So they've done an absolutely brilliant job across the board of using human voice and conversations as data sources at enormous scale, just enormous scale. So we're, you know, that's what we're looking to do in the real world.
It's oddly enough, coming back to kind of what we're doing and what we talked about in the past, you could basically pull in all the podcasts and pull all the information out of that if you wanted to.
Absolutely. Isn't that interesting? And so that's, you and I, we're at the same time. And I say to a lot of people, and you'll understand this better than most of the people that I've said it to, but in the AI space and with voice, I feel very much like it's the internet in like 96. Mm-hmm. It just, like, every idea is going to be tried, and we're lucky enough to be around for that. Everyone's going to try everything, and a lot of it's going to fail. A lot of it's going to kind of crawl along. A lot of it's going to boom. And then a lot of those things that fail are going to be huge in like 10 years, right? Like podcasts.
Right. Like podcast.
Yeah.
So were you, so looping back here to the Give Me Talk, whenever it kind of, you know, fizzled or whatever you want to call it, whenever it died down a little bit.
Yeah, I could say flamed instead of fizzled.
But yeah. Okay. Flamed. were you aware then of when podcasting popped onto the scene a few years later? Cause that was 2004 ish.
Yeah. I was aware, and you know, like, that was my first time, and this is only my second time starting something now, but that was my first time through, you know, and I'd heard all the thing about pioneers take all the arrows and all that. And there's a lot of, you know, people kind of aw shucks themselves when something doesn't work out. But mm-hmm. it's interesting to have been there that early and have been that close. Mm-hmm. I had a co-founder and he and I spoke just a few weeks ago. You know, and it's, you reminisce about the what ifs on that, you know, because it really wasn't that much later. And so I go back to what that engineer said, you know, it's like, I'll keep that piece of advice in mind. You know, if the voice AI thing we're working on now kind of starts crawling, I'm going to make sure I keep that life support.
Right.
because the data is valuable. It's amazing. And as you say, the use cases we may not even know is your example just now of taking these podcasts and putting them all in one space and then being able to query them. You could take all the podcasts about podcasting and then ask of those podcasts, what made the most popular podcast? And the AI will go through those millions of hours of transcripts and it'll tell you what it finds.
Yeah. Interesting. I don't know if you're thinking about this space as well, but people who do research do all these interviews.
Yeah.
And this would be a boom to what they're doing because
absolutely.
They have to do this is, you know, that's a very manual in the past has been a very manual thing. And so this would be something to where you could, you know, really crank this stuff out if you could make it easier to do.
Absolutely. So the idea, so there's this idea of structured versus unstructured data. And so our data scientists, you know, for him, that's a very 101 concept, but it's interesting when it's brought to someone like me for the first time, because especially if you think about market research and surveying, you have fields that get filled out, and those the depth of the data is constrained by the format of the field. Am I typing it? Am I checking a box? Am I circling a number? And that's all structured data, and it flows directly into some database so you can evaluate it. The unstructured stuff nobody could do. Unstructured just being basically, why did you come to our restaurant instead of going to someone else's?
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't use those before because if you did 1,000 of them, someone would have to manually tally all of it.
Correct. Yeah.
now we have a kind of a butler that'll listen to them all and tell us what everybody said, and it'll tell us the commonalities and the differences. And so that's another thing we've been looking at as part of our offering is just what's the value of unstructured data right now? With AI able to interpret and present results around analysis of unstructured data, that space alone is going to be fascinatingly gigantic and all kinds of niche-y and vertical. But just the idea of having unstructured data as a resource now, I think is totally fascinating.
You're going to have to jump in and get Tell Jeeves. Just as a throwback.
Ask Jeeves. Yeah, well, you didn't tell him. You asked him, remember?
Right. You asked, but now yours is Tell Jeeves.
That is, actually, you're right.
tell Jeeves what you want, and then Jeeves is going to process that and give you an answer.
That's a really nice spin on it, yeah.
Because, ask Jeeves.
So when you think about, like, the search engine space, I always go back to that ecosystem that I wasn't part of it, but Excite was there, Ask Jeeves was there.
You know, right.
Google wasn't there, Yahoo was there. And you knew it was valuable to allow people to discover information on the internet, but you never quite knew who's going to win that race or how. And they all morphed into media companies for a short time, if you remember. And Google figured out, no, it's really just about the query. And now you see Google is using generative on the top of all of their search results. And it'll give you the little summary paragraph.
Mm-hmm.
And so you see all of these things morphing and changing, and the power of it's just fascinating.
The interesting thing about the Google thing is when I noticed that popping up, I'm like, aren't people going to get aggravated because now Google is the top of every search? There's nobody can be the top other than Google.
That's an interesting point. Yeah, the hierarchy is what Google says and then everybody else.
Right. Yeah.
And so, I'll fall below Google.
Yeah. Everybody's under Google now. They flipped the, they took control of the market. Basically, they're paying government.
That's really interesting. Yeah. Yeah. I wonder how they're, I don't pretend to be smart enough to run a Google, but it's interesting to think that the idea of sponsoring links on search results may be going away after all those years of dominance.
Right. Yeah. It's weird, but it's so interesting. And this is, talking to you is so fascinating, especially because you had this breadth of history, right? So you were involved in these things and how quickly, no offense to your product, but how quickly they get forgotten.
Oh.
Because I guest on other shows for your friend Rob. I was on his show and so forth. And then whenever I, he wasn't one of the people that answered this way, but other people, I won't pick on them. But I get on there and they're like, how long you been doing this? And I said, well, since 1999. And they're like, what? They go, how long have you been podcasting? Like 4 years? I'm like, no, since before there was podcasting. They have no idea.
No, and you're right.
We have maybe it's not a problem. I don't know. It's because this gets into my area of not being really a business person. But to me, always the lack of knowledge of history is bad. And, I tell people that I'm on their show, I'm like, do you know podcasting is 20 years old? And they're like, what?
Yeah.
I thought it started in the pandemic.
No, that's when they started paying attention.
Right. Yeah. But that's when it all kind of congealed and became a thing, an industry, a way of doing things. And I still tell people when I talk to them, I said, if you want to make money in podcasting, make something that supports podcasting, not podcast, because there's more money in supporting podcasting than there is in actually doing a podcast for most people.
Because there's so many podcasters looking for a leg up.
Correct.
Yeah. Makes sense. Yeah. That's a very good point. It's interesting to me. And I think, again, because you and I have a shared history in this, if you listen to like a Smartless, something like that, it's interesting to me that in that day, a group of like similarly famous, talented people wouldn't have gotten together and just made podcasting massive well before it became big. I know that you can't artificially goose the build up of a tech product, but it's just interesting to me that, and I guess that it took that long because it's such a fundamentally simple thing.
Yeah,
it really is. It's a recording.
It really is. Yeah, it's everybody wanting to be, well, whenever we were doing it, everybody wanted to be a DJ, and that was one of the downfalls, was because not only was this coming on, and I was going to ask you how you dealt with this. It Give Me Talk is Napster. So that was the heart of the record companies telling everybody, quit playing our songs.
That was our first thing. When I was talking to, I've had a very small circle of people at the agency I was knocking around with, but I was talking about this like do-it-yourself thing. The first thing was do-it-yourself DJing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, because that is also interesting. And so it immediately went to Napster and all of the battles they were fighting. And that's So producing your own content, obviously you have the IP rights to it versus using somebody else's. But the Napster thing in our day, you know, and the amount of media attention that got, a lot of because of the legal battles that,
that it they're suing grandmas. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Right. But look, I mean, that was Andreessen, right? So look now, I mean, nice yeah. work.
Well, real quick, just a interjection here. So the funny thing is you said you own the IP. The realities are that the bigger universe doesn't necessarily always agree with that. Rob made a song with my voice from our episode, and Spotify won't play it because they say I stole it. And it's Rob's song and it's my voice, and we created it in agreement. And they're like, no, we can't determine who owns this. So we're not going to put it on Spotify.
That's okay. Didn't know that. So wait, so because they can't figure out like the provenance or whatever of the song.
Right. I'm assuming they sent me an email and said, we're just not going to put this on. And I'm like, and I wrote back and I said, that's me. That's me.
That's so curious.
And so the funny thing is that we've progressed greatly, but the systems are now in place that they, it's only going to get better, hopefully, but the systems in place now will strike things because it's ambiguous to its system.
Yeah. So they're de-risking it by just not playing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So you guys, were you monitoring? How were you monitoring people just playing music on your on Give Me Talk?
We weren't. We weren't. We would spot check stuff, and we would listen to the shows and all of that. It became there were just too many of them, and there was no automated way to do it. So
yeah,
a lot of that, you know, in the old days was just let her rip.
Yeah,
and it, you know, back then too, as you know, as you learn, as you get older, the legal system is highly reactive. It's not predictive. And so they were like, what is this? Like, people are doing their own, like, we understand like radio stations, but now people are doing it. And so the amount of like, I think they were just trying to get their hands around what are all the legalities here back that early.
Well, what one can say, basically, YouTube was built upon stealing everybody's stuff. And the reason it's so popular is because they didn't put that out there as a, you know, a statement, you know, steal everybody's stuff and you can watch it here. They said, make your own stuff and you can watch it here, but everybody was doing it. And they couldn't, you know, hit the gopher as fast as it popped up.
Yeah.
And they still have problems doing that. So,
yeah. All these years later.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's, and all these laws morph. Now we're looking at all the AI laws coming out and how, you know, how are we going to keep that thing? We won't, but how would we keep it contained if laws could do such a thing?
Right.
all of our voices, you know, I don't know where this will wind up, but chances are fair it'll get scraped somewhere and dumped into some model somewhere.
I'm waiting for the AI law that gets written by AI and then struck down by AI. That'll yeah. It'll be a big, you know, circle.
It's really funny. Then it just doesn't need us anymore. It's got its own ecosystem where it's just like we're irrelevant all of a sudden.
Well, the funny thing is, I think we're heading towards things like that because with all the different tools, people are utilizing them and not to, you know, to create things for them just to put out there. Eventually, it's just going to be AIs talking to AI out in the social sphere. There's going to have to be something new in social media to discern what is actually something that's original versus something that's just been pulled from, you know, the greater group, as it were.
Yeah, you know, that gets back to our conversation earlier about, I mean, in the old days, it was, the human voice you heard was a human voice because no one was capable of faking one. But you and I have both seen now in this most current election cycle, the fake imagery. You
know,
the fake voices, the fake everything. And it's really, I get to the point of we're doing the project we were doing back in the day. We understood it could have been misused and we knew we were going to come up against those challenges of hate speech and all, you know, people making bad decisions.
Right.
And what we're doing now, you know, any tech tool, really, you can make a bad decision and suddenly what's good turns bad. But we're going to be recording people out in the wild, and then, you know, we'll have their conversations. You know, largely it'll be about mattresses and cars, but we're going to catch them. And, you know, and we're also watching people sell. We're watching people behave, and people feel evaluated when that happens. And mm-hmm. I really think about just the heart behind a lot of these tools and what happened to Twitter after Elon Musk took it over. And, you know, it really, you know, just one big jerk of the wheel at a big platform like that, and suddenly things get ugly fast. And so,
well, blue sky is the reaction to that.
Blue sky is the reaction to that. And let's hope those guys, you know, keep to the straight and narrow. I've been fascinated. I mean, that's when I've been just this week, I've been, you know, just watching the battle play out there. If it's like just the good, you know, the battles between kind of black and white, but, you know, and all of these tools, everything, podcasting, the whole bit, you could say some of the most popular podcasts now have really become toxic and poisoning. Mm. Some of the other ones are just wonderful and enlightening, and
yeah,
it's kind of a question of just which way you steer them.
The interesting thing, we mentioned Twitter, X now,
yeah,
which no one who's been around wants to call it X, but yeah. Was Odeo, and Odeo was a podcasting aggregator.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so before it was Twitter, they had a thing called Odeo, and that was what Jack Dorsey and et al. And they weren't. It wasn't performing, and they did a pivot to Twitter.
That is really interesting. I had no idea. So they were in the podcasting game too, and it didn't work.
Yeah, That's the way it started for them. Because I because we were on Odeo, and I mean, everybody is an aggregator. They just take.
Yeah.
And and I just remember that, and then I remember the turn when they switched over too, and announced they were doing this other thing, because there's a whole history with Leo Laporte and Twit, because Twit was already registered, and then Twitter came out, and there was a whole thing with that. But it's also intertwined and intermeshed, and when I heard about Give Me Talk, I was a little bit, I'm like, why in the world don't I know about this? Because I've got so many other, you know, kind of, you know, things in there with all these other, you know, platforms at that time period, because there were so few people. I mean, you had a lot of people, but in the realm of the numbers now compared to then, I mean, it was very few people.
Very small.
And I was really kind of taken aback that I had no clue. And that's one of the reasons I want to talk to you that in this, like, this little project, but besides that. But so obviously you're working on stuff that's moving into the future. Mm-hmm. with this, you're basically aggregating conversations. Obviously legally. Actually, talking about that. So the interesting thing to me is, and I don't think I've really seen much about this, is so you and I have, you know, agreed to have this conversation, right? Yeah. And in different states, there's different laws on recording people.
Yeah.
But I have not seen anything in the news with everybody recording everybody. Like, we're on StreamYard right now. Mm-hmm. And with all these different tools and everything, you know, I mean, I'm surprised we haven't had a some kind of, you know, big court case where somebody's in the background and they get recorded against their will without their knowledge, and it becomes a thing. So with your new product and so forth, what is, you mentioned the kind of standard line there, you know, this is going to be recorded. Yeah. Is that something that then everybody gets trained? You're like, you got to say this before we start this process, because if you don't, then this is all for nothing.
That's exactly right. So consent becomes, so there's single and dual party consent, and it varies by state. Single party, and it's all based on wiretapping, going back into history. It's all,
yeah.
It's 100% based on wiretapping.
Yeah.
But, you know, that law, I guess they figured was good enough. So in a lot of states, you can just go ahead and record, and as long as you know you're doing it, you're good to mm-hmm. go. And in some states, you need to let the other parties know. And that's why on the phone, they just do it everywhere. And so it'll say this call may be recorded or monitored. If you do, I have a Fireflies account, which is a little note taker AI thing for my Zoom. It'll send out a consent notice before the meetings. And similarly, we have signage up where recordings are going on.
Mm-hmm.
you know, that there is audio recording taking place in this facility. Everybody is trained to ask for consent on the recording itself. And if somebody doesn't want to do it, they turn it off. And so, you know, we have to abide by the same consent laws anybody else would. There's some interesting, I'll tell you, there's the world of legal, and we'll overdo it there. But there are some companies right now in the voice AI space that I think are really interesting. And two of them are in door-to-door sales. So I live in downtown Chicago, and nobody would be dumb enough to knock on the door here. But there is a world, I guess, of door-to-door sales, and particularly of kitchen knife sales, a company called Cutco.
Oh, Cutco. Yes, the Cutco people.
So some of the managers, a couple of the managers of that company came out with, they were tired of doing walk-alongs with their salespeople. You know, they would go with and knock on doors and coach them based on what they heard. And it just wasn't scalable because there's only one manager and all these salespeople. So they kind of did what we're doing. And they've raised money for it, and they're scaling it out. It's a door-to-door sales kind of coaching thing. And what it means is functionally that when someone opens their door to a salesperson, there's a hot mic at the door.
Mm-hmm.
And these people are talking to them and letting themselves be recorded door-to-door, complete stranger, about kitchen knives. And I talked to, and so to me, that speaks to, it speaks to the fact that we right now, like I have three different Echoes in my house and they all have different names.
Right. Yeah.
And I've got my iPhone sitting here as I talk to you and I'm talking into my laptop and I, you know, we're all so used to the presence of what could be called surveillance, but in, you know, glass half full is kind of like an audio helper tool. Mm. That in the real world, I don't know that people are that sensitive to it. We are, you know, as I said, we're working at an auto dealership that serves an older customer segment. Lincoln is, you know, serves an older, you know, more affluent customer segment, and people get recorded. You know, the guy asks them, we're going to record this for training purposes. And there's a sign up and they're like, yeah, okay. And here and there we get people who say, you know, I'd rather not, or they don't get it. You know, same way that we did in the auto service department. You know, have a mic on the table. Is it okay? Sure. And we're just not getting the kind of, we're not getting really any negative reaction from anybody. And I think it's more a sign of the times with the technology. And I think people, yeah, you want to ask. I mean, I think you want to ask whether it's legal or not. Of course, you don't want to,
right.
You don't want to surreptitiously record people. But, you know, our goal in the end too, is we figured out the whole ecosystem in recording needs to get something. So if you walk into an auto dealership, as I did many times in April, you have very long conversations and you're trying to like take mental notes, and I'm not a car guy, so I don't know anything about what they're saying. So when I leave, I have this very partial knowledge of what was said, and it gets screwed up with the guy I saw the day before. But, you know, we're talking about sending out, you know, emails immediately afterwards to the customers. Here's a something, you know, when they walk in, don't worry about taking notes. Don't worry about remembering.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to send you a summary of this thing right after you leave. And that's the value to the customer, right?
Yeah.
And that's how I used it when I went shopping for cars. You know, I could not have kept my effort organized if I hadn't done that. And so, you'll automatically get a recap, you know, what you said about financing, what they said about the motor, the trim packages, or whatever it was, availability. And so it frees up the people on the other end. And I think we're getting used to that idea that if we participate in these like audio technology interactions, we get something back for it, right? Mm-hmm. There's a reason I have this Echo here, is because it's better that I have it than I don't. And that's what we need to be too, right?
Mm-hmm. The way you're talking, it sounds like we're going to have basically body cams on everybody who does any kind of work. So like a guy comes to work on your furnace, he's going to be wearing a body cam.
You know, that actually, so another one of the applications for that voice stuff is solar sales and installation. So there you go. I mean, that's, but if you think about, you know, one of the things that we've really thought about is containment. And so when we initially started this idea, you know, we looked at a lot of different verticals, retail, hospitality, hotels. And so what we finally did is we were starting to draw a tighter and tighter circle around a conversation that was very unlikely to have any private details in it. And so if you're in a restaurant, chances are fair you're going to catch something somebody wouldn't want you to catch, or somebody
right,
some young person is going to say something. But if you're a one-on-one with a car dealer, you know, and wait, you can mute the app and you can stop the recording. Certainly you're in full control. But if you're in a situation like that, or you're buying a mattress, or, you know, or even if you're somebody's door-to-door selling knives for those guys, typically people aren't going to be revealing anything that they wish they hadn't said. And so it's a lot of it's about use case. And, you know, I wouldn't doubt we go to a hot mic society.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you walk, I'm very aware of these now because of what I'm doing.
Right. Yeah.
Costco or anywhere, the video surveillance, you know, is mm-hmm. 110%. And when we were talking to some of the, we had board of advisors and, you know, chief operating officer of a very large restaurant chain spends a lot of his time investigating claims that customers or employees behaved in a certain way or said a certain thing.
Mm-hmm.
What they do is they go back and they sit and stare at security footage and they try to lip read on the security footage. Who behaved how, and is it evidentiary almost? And so you're an inch there from just audio recording the stuff.
Right.
I mean, you're already lip reading off of somebody. You already see their face. You've established, you could probably establish their identity at some level. And so really what's the harm? But yeah, it's an this is a very interesting world. And you think about the call center people are all recorded now. All those calls, mm-hmm. like Amazon drivers have cameras in their faces, you know, that are installed mm-hmm. in trucks.
Yeah.
All the truck drivers, you know, are monitored now for everything, mm-hmm. how fast they're going, to where they're stopping. And everybody eventually, it's not like they're abiding by it, but there is, you know, you try to make it worth that other party's while. And again, it gets back to the heart thing. That gets back to like, who's got their hands on the wheel of the technology? Because you can use all of these things in a way that's harmful to somebody, or you can use them in a way that's helpful to everybody. And so we just, you know, one of our primary cultural directives is like, you know, as Google used to say, kind of do no harm. But that is 100%, you know, how we're going to roll. Mm-hmm. We want employees to get the most out of this. We want the customers to get the most out of this. And if we wander off into a place where that's not happening, or somebody's using it the wrong way, and we just, you know, have had very recent conversations about this, we'll just deplatform the users. We'll just take them all. Yeah.
How interesting. Do you have a cool name for this so far? Like Gimme Talk was a really good name, but
Gimme Talk was a great name. And I didn't say that actually when I sent that press release, it was called TalkNet Radio. And then I got a cease and desist letter. So then we went to Give Me Talk, which was a much better name.
Okay.
But we had another name for this, Vericlear. And then in the meantime, somebody popped up and trademarked it. So we had to come up with another name. And if you've been through this process, at least for us, naming was almost entirely around the availability of a domain.
Mm-hmm, sure.
You can pick any random collection of ASCII characters and you're never going to get it. So we came up, one of my partners came up with a great name called Genubi, GENUBI.AI. Mm-hmm. And Genubi is, it's a massive star. And so we hope we're going to create, we hope we're going to create massive stars out there and selling and, you know, in business. And so that one really worked out. Yeah. So Genubi with a G.
But that all ties into it. Yeah. Your star performer, star everything. Yeah.
He looked into it. Yeah.
So that was good. Yeah. That's very good. Yeah. Because I love the, you know, you have to have multiple levels on your name, if you ask me. But
yeah. And we really, that came, I mean, poor her. She went through a few weeks of it. We probably had 150 things on paper and she loved none of them. And then this one popped up and we're all like, get it, buy it, do it.
Yeah, get it all your socials and everything. Yep. You got to get on Blue Sky now, unfortunately.
Yeah, we do actually have to get Blue Sky go. That's true. Right.
Get it while you can. I've been telling everybody. I'm like, get your name now.
Good point.
If you don't get it now, you'll never get it. So,
well, you know, you'll also remember that in the old day, like I remember going and emailing this person, I think her name was Ninj, at Yahoo to get my little agency in Chicago like listed on Yahoo. And everything was manual, and all those domains were sitting out there, cars.com, business.com, whatever.
Right.
And you and I could have gone and bought up a handful of
those. Oh, I know.
Lived on a desert island the rest of our lives.
I'm so angry at my younger self for not thinking about this.
I know.
That and the fact that I had I always tell my son that I'm angry with him because I was playing with making servers, and I made him a Minecraft server.
Oh, wow.
And for him and his friends to play on. And I was thinking I should make a Bitcoin mining thing out of this. This was at the time when you could still do that effectively at your house.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't. I made him a Minecraft server. I said, "You're poor because I made you a Minecraft server." That's what I tell him.
Oh, my God. Yeah. You know, there's so many missed opportunities out there. I remember I saw the business.com name sold like in 2003 for like $7.5 million.
Oh,
like,
I know.
And I could have dropped $20 on that.
Exactly. Yeah. At the time, it's like, why wasn't I that forward thinking? Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, you were forward thinking with the podcasting for sure.
Yeah. But to what ends? Come on. Yeah.
Didn't get you the desert island, but whatever.
Right. Yeah. I think I traded in for onebusiness.com back then and just forget about all the rest of this work. So,
yeah.
But, Ted, thank you so much for taking some time today and talking about Give Me Talk. And we've gone from the past all the way into the future with your new venture. And say that again, because I didn't type it in, but Genubi.
Genubi.ai.
I'm going to put it up on the screen. That looks correct?
That's it.
All right. So folks can look into that. And that to me, it's a no-brainer, right? People have to do this.
I hope so. Hey, look, you and I, everybody started podcasting eventually. So
right.
Good idea.
So, but thanks for being here today on Priorcaster and telling us about this. And folks, we'll catch you next time. Ted, hang on for just a second.
Will do.